Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Arseholics podcast on Sunday night, the 24th of March. Just in case you had no idea what date it was. Sorry. And I've got Aaron in with me. So it's just the two of us, just Raj and Aaron in today to just have a chat before the Easter weekend's massive, massive City Arsenal game. Jeez, that's going to be huge. But also, we haven't recorded in a couple of weeks. So we recorded last before the Porto game. So we haven't had the chance to discuss the draw and the fact that we got Bayern Munich. So we'll talk a little bit about that, talk a little bit about the international break, and also all the fixtures seem to have kind of been moved and decided for the sort of title run-in now for the final couple of months. So we'll just reflect on how that looks. But as always, if you can subscribe and share the pod, that would be incredibly awesome. But Aaron, I haven't let you say anything so far. Hello, mate. How are you?
Hello, mate. Yeah, good, good. Happy international break. I'm quite enjoying this international break. I don't normally enjoy them, but after Porto, I mean, after that game itself, I was exhausted. I mean, I don't know if you remember how you felt the day after. Yeah, getting home and... Yeah, I was like, oh, thank God we didn't have a game that weekend. And actually, like, I've had quite a busy weekend, and it's been quite nice to not think about football this weekend because, you know, I think we know what's coming. And I think after come Friday, come Saturday for the next, I think it's only 6 weeks left until the end of the season or something like that, 6-7 weeks left. For the next 7 weeks, I think all we're going to be talking about and all we're going to be thinking about is Arsenal and football. So, yeah, this is very much it feels like the calm before the storm.
If we flip onto that as a topic for a second, the run-in and the fixtures, like you said, yeah. So 7 or 8 weeks roughly, it's a shed load of games, isn't it? It's basically, I can't remember the exact time, but effectively for a big chunk of this 7-8 week period, we're basically doing 5 games every 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, exactly. April is pretty intense, especially if we do manage to get past Bayern and we get into the quarterfinals, and it's pretty much a game every 3-4 days, no real rest. It's going to be tough. And I think, you know, to compare that, and we probably go into a bit more detail on this in a bit later on, but I think Spurs, for example, have a 2 week gap before they play us at home. So as in when we go there in the North London Derby. So look, it's going to be stressful. It's going to be intense, but this is what we want, right? We're a big club now, and big clubs have big games in April and May, and they hang around and they have a game every 3 days because it means that they're in a title race usually, and it means they're in the latter stages of European competition, and we're thankfully this year in the good one. So it's going to be intense, man. It's really going to be intense, and I think it's going to be, we haven't really experienced this for a long time. You know, when was our last Champions League quarterfinal, and when was the last time? You know, I think we're probably going back to like Pete Wenger era when we're in a Champions League quarterfinal and going for a title at the same time. So it's a new feeling for a lot of us as fans, and actually for players, for the manager. None of them have ever done this before. They don't know how to do it. So,
but also, Joe, I think one of the weirdest, I suppose, transition into Champions League football from an Arsenal fan perspective, for me is that we've sort of went from this period of qualifying every year, yet never ever really thinking we would have any chance of winning it, but we're qualifying every year, right? Yeah. So every year we're qualifying, but you kind of go, how awesome would it be to get to the quarterfinals? Like, oh my God, if we got to the semis, that would be ridiculous. But you never thought that we can actually win it. To then going to a case where it's the first time we're playing in the Champions League for years, and we're like, genuinely one of the favorites.
Yeah,
like, I think we're probably third
favorites, I think, after.
I don't know if that's changed. I mean, so we were second or third favorites prior to the draw. But I think I'd be interested to see what it is since the draw, given like all the top, you know, Man City, Real Madrid and Arsenal were sort of the top three in terms of the bookies' favourites. And given we're all on the same side of the draw, I imagine that's all been changed now.
Probably.
But it's mental though, don't you think so, Aaron, in that respect, where we've gone from basically, again, playing every year, but never really having a chance to win it, to now kind of immediately being, well, we're in it and we're one of the good teams. What, I don't know if it's going to be an easy question to answer, and maybe it's not even worth trying, but why do you think that is?
I think there's a couple of things, right? I think we have dramatically gone from being, you know, not many teams go from being fighting for sixth, seventh place to challenging for a title win, especially in the Premier League, so quickly over the course of like 2 or 3 years, with that actual improvement going season for season. And I think that, and also the fact that if you are able to dominate in the Premier League and actually challenge for top honours and top place in the Premier League, by default, because the Premier League is, you know, in my opinion, the strongest league in Europe, you automatically just become one of the favourites to win it. Because the Premier League is so, there's so much money, and there's, you know, it's basically like the Super League of Europe nowadays, the Premier League, where all the best players really want to come. And it therefore means that with the money that and the financial advantages that they have, which I don't always think is a good thing. Like, I do, you know, the kind of traditionalist in me definitely wants to see a strong Italy, and the Italian teams being strong, the Spanish team, actually, no, screw the Spanish teams. I have no love for the Spanish teams, but the French teams, the Italian teams, the German teams, you know, the Ajaxes of the world. It would be nice if you would see some more favourites from those leagues to win it every year, to be favourites. Because like, when was the last time a Spanish team except Madrid and Barcelona were in it? Or like even Bayern, for all their dominance, they're below us in terms of favourites to win it. So I think just the strength of the Premier League and the money that's in the Premier League nowadays, and you know, the Man City effect, it's kind of leveled everyone up a bit. Because if, in order to be good in the Premier League, you have to compete with, you know, the best team, the richest team in the world, really, in terms of Man City and their financial outlay and all their tricks and, you know, deceit. So it's an interesting dynamic that we've got to contend with now.
I do actually agree with generally everything you've said, but it is interesting because your point about, you know, the Premier League's might and basically the fact that if you are a challenger for the Premier League title, which we are, you by default are a challenger for the Champions League because of the strength of the Premier League. Very good point, but it is weird though then in that respect how Man United and Newcastle tanked so badly, right, in the Champions League this year. You would have thought they would have at least managed to come out of the groups, or, you know.
I completely forgot Man United were in the Champions League this year.
I think about how they struggled. If you remember their game in the Champions League, right? They actually pulled off some like kind of miraculous games where actually they won or drew or whatever. I can't remember the end results, but I remember it was games where they were losing and then they came back, or games where they conceded a penalty at the end and the opposition missed. Despite all that, they still didn't qualify. Like that.
I remember that Copenhagen game when that was funny. The Premier League is just a weird one, right? And I don't know what you think about the new Champions League and the new format next year, which I'm actually quite looking forward to be honest, because I think I've never been a fan of the Champions League group stages. I think they're just so dull and so predictable, unless you're a Man United fan, of course. I do think that the group stage next year might make it a bit more interesting. But then I think the worry then is that because they're doing that, you know, they're doing that whole like Wimbledon style, like World Cup style draw, where it's like top two ranked teams will avoid each other to the final. You might then get some quite predictable knockout rounds, because the way I think it's going to work is like the first, the team that finishes top of that big league of 36 teams will play the lowest ranked qualifying team or something like that. So it might be a bit weird after that. But
I still really need to get my head around the format, because I understand it to a basic level. But the bit I haven't quite got my head around, which you might know better than me, is so you don't play everyone home and away, right? Like you don't, right? So, but you do play everyone is it a case where, you know, the whole thing is cut up into sort of chunkier groups?
It's completely random. It's even more random than that. So
right.
As far as I understand it, is you have 36 teams.
Yeah.
The teams are then seeded one to, like, in seeds. So seeds, top seeds, 1, 2, 3, 4. Bless you. And then I think from next year, they'll just do it purely based on coefficients. So you know how traditionally, if you win your league, you're automatically a top seed, right? In this year's format, that goes away. So you will have like the best 8 teams based on coefficient will be top seeds. And then you play 2 teams from each of the 4 seeds.
Right.
Which gives you 8 games, right? But you play them all once. So you play, so you have 2 teams. So we might get, let's say, Real Madrid and Bayern Munich are in the top seeds. You could get Real Madrid at home, Bayern Munich away. Then you'll play 2 from the second pot, which might be PSV at home, Inter Milan away. And then you just have 8 games. And then you basically get 3 points for a win. And then the teams that get the most amount of points, the top 8 go through automatically. And then teams 9 to 24 go into a playoff round. And then after that, it's knockouts. But it's in a pre-arranged tournament draft.
So there's an element of luck about it in terms of you obviously, for example, the fixture that you would play with the best team in your group, you'd want to be at home. But there's a chance that gets drawn away.
Yeah. Yeah, but you might not play them, right? So because you're not going to be in a group, it's just going to be any of the 8 teams at top seeds.
But say the top 2, but you know, for example, Arsenal draw Real Madrid as,
yeah,
you know, one of the one of the top seeded,
yeah,
teams that they would play.
Yeah, you'd want them at home, right? Yeah,
you'd want them at home, right? So there's an element.
The way it works is you get 2 of each,
yeah,
and then the second, if you get your first top seed game at home, your second top seed game will be away. Is how I think it works.
Fine. I definitely need to invest some energy in understanding.
Yeah, I think it's properly. So that's why it's so complicated that apparently it's impossible to do a draw. They just have to let a computer decide most of it.
Right. Right. Well, I guess we got that to look forward to. Yeah. And that'll be interesting. I wonder how that will also impact, if it will impact, you know, how teams, Champions League teams, approach the sort of first half of their seasons. Because I think, you know, at the moment, it's not that teams, I think, take the group stage of the Champions League easy, but I think that there is an element where, you know, like you make sure you win your home games against kind of teams who are sort of weaker than you, and you find it, like, from a Premier, from let's best way of looking at it is, let's look at Arsenal this season. Comfortably, when we've been playing our Champions League games at home, they've been a walk in the park compared to our Premier League games, right? In fact, I don't think we conceded a goal at home at all. And it was generally, we scored quite easily. But I guess, so it'd be interesting to see if that added pressure of playing better teams earlier, whether that does anything. But anyway, yeah.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think anyone's next season will be weird, because no one will know how to approach it. Like, because like you said, right, the group stage now, which is, you know, you usually get to like 10 points. You win your 3 home games, you get a point or 2 away from home, and then you're through, right? Now, I don't know how it's going to work. Like, it depends on like what the other teams around you are doing, and every place in that team of 36. Like, finishing second gives you a much, much better chance of getting to the final than finishing third. in the groups of 36, right? It's probably going to be quite a good format once everyone understands it, because it makes it a lot more interesting. But yeah, I don't know. Let's see.
Yeah, see, I am looking forward to it. Just because it is a bit different, like you say, it's be kind of fun. But obviously, a lot of football to be played. And what are we? I suppose let's finish talking about that topic more generally, which is around kind of the amount of fixtures that we have. You touched on it. This is what we want to be. You know, we want to be competing in multiple competitions. We want to be competing for the Premier League title. We want to be competing for the Champions League. That's going to mean fixtures. I mean, at the end of the day, we got knocked out of the FA Cup earlier. If we were still in the FA Cup, there'd been even more fixtures. It's just part and parcel of being a big team. Do you think that we are ready for such fixture congestion? Have we got the squad to cope with it yet? And I suppose linked to that, you'd probably say, you know, looking at our injuries, we're probably in a pretty good place, you know, probably in the best place that we've been this whole season injury wise. Pretty much everyone, I think, is training at least. Timber's probably some way back from playing actual minutes, but at the end of the day, he is training. And everyone else, I think, is sort of there and thereabouts. Do you think we're ready to tackle such a kind of congested business end of the season?
I think we're as ready as we have been in a long time. This is what we've been building the squad up for. This is what we have been, you know, this is why we've been signing the players that we've been signing, is to give us depth, give us options. And look, I think I've said this before, right? The problem with the Premier League is at the moment is that Man City are the standard setters, and Man City have a ridiculous squad depth, which you can't compare to. No one can compete with. So, you know, I think City basically have zero injuries at the moment too. And, Carl Walker got injured playing for England. But, if you want to set that standard of, like, if that's the standard of squad depth that we have to get to, I don't think we'll ever get there. Right. But put City aside, I think our squad depth now is probably as good as Liverpool's and any other team in the league, in terms of, like, I know Liverpool probably got a bit more depth going forward, but we've certainly got a bit more depth in midfield and a few more rotational options at the back, and Liverpool have got injuries. I think I would rather have our squad going into this run-in than I would Liverpool's, put it that way.
Yeah, fair. You know, your point of us never getting there from a kind of squad perspective. You know, an interesting thing I find with Man City is, you're right, they seem to just have so much quality. They sign players for big money who, you know, I think I said it on a previous episode, we have Elneny and they have Nunes, who they signed for, yeah. Mateus Nunes, right? Who signed for like 50 million or whatever it was. That's their Elneny equivalent, literally. Like, he's just there. He turns up sometimes. Whatever, that's what he's there to do. So yes, you know, really impressive. But at the same time, they have a big squad, right? Like, you know, they have, often you kind of look at their squads that they name for Premier League and Champions League, and there's loads of kids I've never heard of who are on the bench. And I think Pep Guardiola's sort of said it a number of times that he likes small squads. He finds big squads really, really difficult to cope with. So, with that in mind, you're bearing in mind we probably aren't, we're probably not going to be able to spunk 50 million on an Elneny upgrade type thing. You probably think with one or two windows, maybe, like, we are able to be in a position where, you know, with a Saka backup, with maybe kind of, you know, a Saliba backup, a backup to a couple of other sort of players, surely we'd be close to having a sort of near perfect kind of squad depth situation.
Yeah, I guess my issue more is, I think City will also go and do exactly this. There's nothing stopping City doing the same thing, yeah, but better, with more money, right? I think City, you know, are also a bit in terms of transition of their squad depth is in a bit of transition this year, the last couple of years. They lost Gundogan, they lost Mahrez, and they've replaced them, but I don't think, like, for example, Grealish, £100 million player, hasn't been able to kind of nail a spot down in the starting 11. So now he's on the bench, and I think they haven't nailed their signings perfectly over last year, except Haaland, obviously. So I do think they will keep going big, and they will keep just accumulating the Nunezes of the world in terms of just having a lot of squad depth. And I think they'll continue to do that. I don't think we can afford to do it as well as they can, but you're right. I think we're not far off, right? And I think a huge, huge part of the run-in will be how we use the squad and how we use some of the players that haven't really had too many minutes this season, but will be fit, whether they'll be match fit, whether they'll be ready to contribute in the way we need and the way Arteta demands of them is another thing. But I think that's going to be huge. Like players like Partey, players like Smith Rowe, Jesus, Zinchenko, who else? You know, if we can get Timber playing, I don't think Timber will play much this season, to be honest, but let's see.
Like Tomiyasu as well.
Tomiyasu, yeah. Those guys, I think, are going to be quite keen. Even someone like Nelson and Nketiah, for example, they might even need to feature quite heavily.
Do you see us in some of our sort of lesser games? I hate that term, especially.
I don't think there are lesser games.
Well, so let's take an example, right? So, you know, we're Luton at home.
Yeah, I think that Luton is the one. That probably the only one, right? I think where we can. Yeah,
perhaps. Yeah, like, so let's take that as an example, even if that is going to be an isolated example. Would you expect to see us start Eddie, start Nelson in games like that?
No, not. I guess the reason I say those guys might be needed is that I'm just assuming that we're going to get a couple of injuries at the wrong time. If we keep all of our players fit, hell, like, I wouldn't even rule it out with Arteta just rolling with the same 11 until it breaks. Because this is what you condition your players for. You know, Arteta's always said the top players need to be playing twice a week in April, in May. And I think what, you know, I don't put it this way, right? And this is they mentioned this on a couple of the other podcasts I was listening to, so I haven't stolen this. But like, how many starts? I'll list some players out. You tell me how many times you think if everyone's fit, how many times they start in the next, let's assume we get to the semi-finals of the Champions League and we have our league games and we're in it till the end. Mm-hmm. How many times do you think the following players start? Eddie Nketiah?
None.
Okay. Rhys Nelson?
None.
Emil Smith Rowe.
Maybe none.
Thomas Partey.
Oh, very good. Very good one. Four.
Four?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So keep in mind, right? So yeah. There's 10 Premier League games left.
Yes.
Right, so and two, currently two Champions League games.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe a few more. Yeah, so.
Yeah, maybe a few more. So, yeah.
Okay, you think he's going to start four games?
Did you think that's too little? Or
I think that's too high.
No, I mean, seriously, right? So I thought you were going to go, I thought you were going to say, like, only think it's going to start four.
You'll start two at best. Luton, probably.
Okay. So with this, are you basically going on the basis that you think that what you said before, which is you think you can see Arteta basically going, I'm playing my best 11 in vertical, I'm playing them. Maybe some variability with like Martinelli, Trossard or whatever, right? Yeah. Like, but you basically think otherwise he's going to go, and maybe variability at the left back. Whatever. But otherwise you think, bang.
I think Arteta has massive trust issues, right, with certain players. And I don't know if he is, and we saw this against Porto, right? Without wanting to go and revisit that game, I don't think Arteta really managed that game that well.
No, he didn't.
And I think a huge part of that was, crap, this is like Champions League, second leg, knockout game. I don't trust any. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to make any subs because I don't trust the players to come on and not mess it up. And I think we saw a bit of that last year. And I think he has his group of players, which are the 11, 12 that start, and maybe I would add Jorginho into that. I would add Jesus into kind of the 11 that has been starting for us. I don't know if he adds, like, even then, I don't think Zinchenko and Partey I think Zinchenko and Partey might have edged themselves out of that trusted group to a certain extent, which is really interesting because Thomas Partey on his day is, you know, still one of the best midfielders in the league, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, let's see. I think with Jorginho, for example, if Rice and Jorginho are fit, I think he's more likely to play Havertz in midfield as an eight and play Rice behind him than he is to... And then the other option is obviously Jorginho, Rice and Havertz further up front. And then I think the other option is Thomas Partey, alongside Declan Rice? I don't know.
That's an interesting one, right? As to like, is it kind of as the alternative to Jorginho? And I think that if you look at it purely on fitness terms, then you probably say that is probably what would happen, because Jorginho is probably there'd be a big question mark as to whether Jorginho can start every game. Yeah, like I really don't think they think Jorginho can start every game from now until the end of the season, which is why I do see kind of Partey playing and starting kind of more games. And like you say, I think maybe there'll be some games where Havertz will play central midfield as well. But I do wonder whether, you know, people talked about, remember the beginning, we go right back to the beginning of the season, right? When we were doing all this funky stuff with our formation, we're playing Partey at right back a bit, even at the back end of last season. Yeah, we're doing that a little bit. There's clearly something Arteta likes about that. There's something, there's like a scheme, right, that he's just been like bubbling. And people said at the beginning of this season, which was that what Arteta was doing at the beginning of this season wasn't doing it because that's what he thought he needed for the Premier League. He was doing that because he thought he needed that for the Champions League. That was the theory, was that kind of, what should I say, flexibility, that kind of just, maybe break from the norm, outside the box thinking. I think, yeah, the rumor mill, if you had it, was like, that is a type of system, a set of tricks that could be very useful in the Champions League. And I wonder whether we'll see that coming towards the back end of the season, like with Partey now coming fit. I wonder if he just thinks, you know what, actually, let me roll the dice on that. Let me try that out every now and again. If he trusts the philosophy, you know, he talks about his non-negotiables. I think he's got that in place, and he probably thinks that he can do lots of creative things with the squad now because they all get the basics and they sort of understand this. But otherwise, I do generally agree with what you're saying. I think, you went through the list of players. I guess there's probably not enough time on this pod to go through every individual player, but player I ask you, Fabio Vieira.
Oh, I forgot about him. Two.
Well, just wow. Okay.
Okay. I think. Okay. No. I think actually now I've changed my mind. Zero.
You don't think he'll start at all?
No.
You'll start anyway. Yeah.
I think the player that he's most likely to come in for will probably be Odegaard, I think, if he was going to start a game. Unless he plays him on the right. Like, he might just say, I want to give Saka a rest and play Vieira on the right-hand side. I don't know. I don't think so. Because I just think Arteta is the type of guy who's just going to roll with this until like he'll Trossard will get some games, Martinelli will get some games, Jesus will get some games. So like, we didn't cover Jesus, but I do think Jesus will probably be the higher, if you compare to the numbers that you've given out for like the players so far. I do see Jesus starting considerably more games than the rest of them, so I'd put Jesus in that trusted group. And again, Tomiyasu is an interesting one. I'm not sure he starts a lot of games, but he certainly will get a lot of minutes, I think, because he will just come on in a lot of games. I can see him doing.
And you're saying all this in the assumption, just to be clear, in the assumption that like injuries don't happen.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, I think if we do get a big injury, then it makes things a lot more complicated.
The problem is when you get these fixes that are so close to one another, right? Someone could pick up a knock, and before you even had the time to diagnose it fully, you're preparing for the next game. And I imagine that I imagine just purely through precaution, we might see some of our key players in particular miss the odd game. I don't imagine it'll happen very frequently. And I think towards the second half of the final part of the season, so, you know, when we start moving into sort of May time, I think, you know, if someone's got a knock, then they just, they put plug whatever injection they can to just get them going. Like, I think they do that. And it does sound like we've got players at the moment, you know, Ben White and Saka, two examples, who have just been playing through stuff and they've just had this managed. And I find that in itself really interesting, by the way. Like, you know, why some players seem to be able to do that and have it managed in such a way where they just play every game, but apparently they've got a genuine issue, and other players, like, you know, geez, like a slight knock and it's cotton wool for months or whatever. But anyway, it will be super interesting how we navigate this from a squad management perspective. To your Arteta point, you know, about Arteta kind of going for his trusted, you know, people. Do you think part of that is through fear of like kind of what happened last season and thinking that he can't back his squad really, like, and he just has to go in with no regrets and just sort of go for whatever he thinks is it's his most sort of reliable option? Is that?
Yeah, I do think, I think some of that is a bit of inexperience from Arteta, where he hasn't really figured out how to really use a squad of players. And to be fair, not many managers do, right? I think, you know, remember that the Liverpool team that won the league, that was the same 11 every game, right? And they just played it. And they played it and played it. And if they had an injury, they'll take one player out, put someone else in, and actually the substitutes that came in were pretty good. But then the minute the first player was, the best 11 player was fit, they came in. And that was it. And I think it's very hard to utilize a squad of more than, say, 14, 15. And like you said, that's why probably Pep doesn't like to have that level of depth, because he doesn't want selection headaches. He doesn't want to deal with the psychology of, oh, potentially got two or three players who could do this job in this game. And I think it is quite a hard thing to do, to manage a lot of players in this level. But I think the counterpoint to that is, you know, you get injuries. And when you do have injuries, you want quality second choices and quality third choices. Because if you don't, what happened last season will happen, where we're having to end up playing Rob Holding away at the Etihad against Erling Haaland, and it doesn't go well. Right, so
that'll be the nightmare, isn't it? If we end up in a situation like that, where we sort of get to some crux games, and we've picked up two injuries, or even just the one injury or whatever, which just means that a key role is supplemented by someone who's fundamentally weaker. It throws the balance off, and then we're there going, if only.
Yeah, I think there's an element of there's always going to be the risk that could happen to anyone. I think one thing we've done this year is we've raised the floor of the team, in the sense that I don't think there's a Rob Holding in the squad anymore, right? Where, like, I think that was, we'll look back on that and just be like, what were we doing? Like, dropping, like, that was such a drop off in the level that you could see it just cause panic. It's giving me shivers thinking about it now, but like Gabriel was just terrified of like everything he was doing, and he was running around. There was that one game, I can't remember what it was, where Gabriel basically had to run across to cover for him, and then he
West
ends up
Ham.
Fouling. Was it West Ham where he then ends up fouling someone? And you're just like, if that was Saliba, Gabriel probably wouldn't even be there.
Yeah. 100%. 100%.
So all of those things, I don't think that happens, right? I think, look, unless we get two or three like injuries, where actually like Tomiyasu's injured, Ben White's injured, and you know, we somehow have to play Cedric at right back or something like that for some reason. But there's probably, you know, again, like, again, Arteta messed about with Partey at right back. So I think now actually if Partey's fit, maybe Partey goes in at right back and is actually the third choice right back now. So I think we've got options to mitigate those absolute disasters now. Like even if Saka gets injured, you know, nobody's Bukayo Saka, but you know, Nelson potentially could do a job there. Jesus could probably play there. Vieira could maybe do a job there. So there are options now for most of the squad. And a lot of that is because we've signed these players that can play in two or three positions. But let's see. I still wouldn't want to go into the run-in and just lose Saka for a month, or lose Saliba, or lose Rice, because those players really do raise our level.
Yeah, agreed. Let's talk about the mountain that's first on the list of mountains, say. Yeah. And that is the, you know, the gargantuan mountain that is Man City. So obviously last season, I mean, how many points did we lose the league by in the end last season? How much was it? Do you remember?
Seven or eight?
It wasn't that much. Was it? I can't have been that much.
Premier League table, let me find out.
Have a quick check.
22-23. We lost it 5 points.
5 points, right. So, look, my point of sort of even asking that is, we lost home and away to Man City last season. That's the difference, really, right? Last season, we lost home and away easily. Man City beat us easily. Like they gave us a lesson both games. You lose the league by 5 points. This season, we beat Man City in the Community Shield. We went and beat Man City at the Emirates in the league in an incredibly... I was thinking about this like this morning, you know, that was just an incredibly intense game of chess between two intensely calibrated teams, which we, you know, nicked a 1-0 in the end, but could probably look back and think we were fortunate that they didn't have Rodri, and they were in that little spell, if you remember, where they didn't have Rodri for like three games. They basically lost them all or dropped points in them all, where, you know, I think that just showcases how important he is to them. Now it looks like both teams are going to be in a situation where, okay, look, I don't know how bad Kyle Walker's injury is, but let's assume it's not that bad, but whatever, you know, as you touched on previously, their squad depth is pretty insane. Mm-hmm. It seems like both teams are going to be able to field near enough their best sides. So it's not like injuries are going to really come into the equation. And it really is a game, right, where it's a strange one, right? Because it's the first after the international break in what people call the sort of the proper business end of the season. So it's the beginning of the business end of the season. And as a result, you know, you'd think that a win or a draw or for either side shouldn't be the be all and end all because there are many games to play. But do you think that Arsenal can afford to lose against Man City for psychological reasons, if not mathematical reasons?
I actually think more mathematical than psychological this time around. I think the bigger issue this time is more City's fixture list and City's running, where I think, you know, I don't see them dropping too many points, especially doing what City do. And I think if you're going to have to, whereas I do think, I don't see us winning every single game, put it that way, in the league, especially given that we might go deep into the Champions League as well. So I think we're going to need that buffer. The only way we're really going to get that buffer is certainly by not losing to City and potentially needing to win. I don't know. Annoying thing is, I think if we lose, I think it makes it very, very hard to win. But if we win, I don't think it makes it much, much more likely that we're going to win it. That's the frustrating part, which is for us, I think the mental thing, the psychological thing will come a bit deeper in when we're away to Spurs, when we're away at Old Trafford, and we are, you know, in these bigger pressure games where we're expected to win, but we, you know, we're still up against good teams when we go in those games. Whereas this is more like, I don't think we're expected to win, but if we lose, I can't see us catching City purely on a mathematical fixture by fixture basis.
I think that's fair. My temptation is to say, I don't think that the result of this game has as big a bearing as I think everyone is trying to make it out to have. Yeah. Well, so I think the narrative has been, if Arsenal lose, then it's basically lights out for Arsenal, because irrespective of the fact that there is kind of time left, City are just that machine. And, you know, they're great at this part of the season anyway. You know, Arsenal psychologically will impact them, whatever. All those things could be true. Don't get me wrong. But I really feel the fact that both teams are in the Champions League has a real big unknown to kind of how the Premier League will pan out. Like, Man City are playing Real Madrid. That's really hard. Like, that's a really hard set of fixtures. And, like, let's just say we beat Bayern Munich, or let's say, you know, we lose to Bayern Munich, whatever. If City get through, if City beat Real Madrid, they've got two legs against Arsenal and or Bayern Munich. That, like, that's a challenge in itself. Now, so even just from a Man City's perspective, and I know, you know, they're great at navigating kind of, you know, this part of the season or whatever, but it is a little bit different. Like you said, like, you know, who are two of those key players navigating these parts of the seasons? It was Mahrez and Gundogan were so important, like, at this end of the season. And like you said, they're sort of a little bit in transition, and I feel like they are a little bit more fallible. So yeah, fine. Like, you know, okay, let's say they are more than capable of beating us at the Etihad, and they may well go do that. But I do feel like the rest of the season still could take its toll on them. And even if the fixture list isn't as bad on paper, like, you know, I do think those Champions League games coming into it, they're still in the FA Cup, all that kind of stuff. I think it could, you know, I'm not sure it is the City of the past. And I say that, like, you know, I don't mean to be jinxing it in any sort of way, or end up trying to look foolish. I just mean that from the perspective that you need these very experienced heads, and Gundogan and Mahrez were so important in that, and they just don't have that. So I wonder if that'll make the impact. And I think with Arsenal, like, Declan Rice said this, right, when we lost to Porto in the, you know, in the first leg of the knockouts, and he basically said words to the effect that he had ultimate confidence in the group that this was not going to get them down. And he said it in a much less clumsy way than I said that, but basically he implied that the mentality of the group is at a point now where they are very positive. They really do kind of look at every game as an individual kind of event, and they wouldn't let kind of, you know, drop points suddenly kind of, you know, floor them, if you like. And I know it's, to some extent, it could just be words or whatever, but I sort of believe him. I feel like I look at the squad and I look at their maturity a little bit and I get that. So I feel like I do think that it's an advantage to us that it's being played sort of early-ish in this kind of run. I think it's better for us that that's the case. And I think that therefore, if we lose or if we draw, I don't think it's lights out. Like, I think that psychologically, if this was last season, yeah, it's different. But I think psychologically, we're better now. And I don't think it is a bit beyond an end all. And on that basis, I'm quite looking forward to it. Look, if we beat them, I do think it'll be really, really cool for our confidence and points wise as well. It would be. And I also wonder if we beat them, whether Man City will just feel a little bit like, okay, it's not the same, is it? You know, maybe there is something that's not quite the same as before. I don't know.
Yeah, I hope so. I think the way, because like I said, given Man City and their relatively kind fixture list, I think the only way they don't win it is something psychological like that, where they just drop their intensity, just that tiny 1% where they're like, oh, maybe, you look, we've got a tough Champions League game. I'd rather win another Champions League than a seventh league title or whatever it is.
Exactly. So, yeah.
maybe Pep is like, actually, I'm just going to prioritize that second Real Madrid game, or I'm going to prioritize playing Arsenal in the Champions League, or something like that, or Bayern in the Champions League, or whoever, right? And or maybe it's like, hey, the FA Cup, we've just got a couple more injuries, and something happens. I don't know. I was just looking at the run-in, right? And I think the interesting thing is we, all three of us, Liverpool and City, have to play Aston Villa. We play them at home, I think. Yeah, we play them at home. Liverpool have to go away to them. Man City play them at home. And all of us have to play Spurs. So we've got them away. Liverpool got them at home. And Man City have got them at home. And I think those two games will probably end up being quite crucial. And I think if we can take, I know we've got Man United, but if we can take 6 points from Spurs away and Villa at home, that will put us, that'll be a big statement, I think.
Agreed. You're sort of touching on another point there as well, which I think is like, who we play and what those teams are playing for at the point in time we play them is so important, isn't it? Like, and you know, it'd be so, yeah. when you look at the end of the season, we're playing Man United, I think, you know, our penultimate fixture, but I think Liverpool are playing United around that time. It was funny, right? And maybe you can confirm that, when exactly Liverpool playing United, but I think
Liverpool got United on the 7th of April.
Okay, that is coming up quite soon. Okay, fine. The reason why I thought it was a bit later was quite funny, because on the Stick to Football podcast, I don't know if you saw it, but like at the beginning, you know, Gary Neville was like kind of almost taunting one of the members of staff who's a Liverpool fan with kind of almost, you imagine if like, you know, it's Man United that ends Liverpool's title challenge kind of thing, you know, and you lost the league at Old Trafford, kind of, you started sort of potentially chanting. But anyway, that'll be super interesting. What's your gut feel about the game? Do you think we'll win? Do you think we'll draw? Do you think we'll lose?
I think we'll get a draw. I think our defense is much, much better than it has been in a long, like, since we played them ever. And I think I also do fancy us to score at least once. But yeah, they've just got a very good team, and I think at home, their home ground, they'll be up for it. They will have the players, and you know, I think it's not many teams can go to the Etihad and win. So I think a draw would be a very, very good result. And I'll be okay with that, I think. I think, you know, Liverpool will be quite pleased. I think Liverpool have got Brighton this weekend. So, let's see. I think we'll get a draw. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we'll get a draw as well. And I think both teams take a draw. You know, I reckon if you kind of ask Pep and you ask like Arteta, and even if you ask the players, I think they're probably going to go, "Joy, if we come out the weekend with a draw, I think both managers and both sets of players would look at the rest of the season as still, you know, I still think they think potentially we can still win the title. I think, I think they'd feel that way. But based on that, like my worry a little bit with us is, look, we are incredible defensively. We really are, right? But when I look back at some of the games this season that we've played away from home, and we've just really tried to manage the game, and then we've just been unlucky, and unfortunately, that can cost you. So let's take an example. You know, Newcastle away, Aston Villa away. I think, you know, we played really good games, I think, but just you know, kind of got unlucky. And I worry a little bit that if we just sort of tried to play, you know, too kind of stoically, I suppose, maybe like too conservatively, then ultimately City are sitting, they've got so much quality. I think if City go 1-0 up, I'd worry a little bit, I think.
I'm not sure. I think City's defense isn't as good as it used to be. Like they're playing this new system this year with the, you know, John Stones doing his thing and basically playing four centre backs. And I don't think that's improved them too much defensively. I do think when I watch City, I think the best way to play City is to really just go at them. Because I think they're very similar to us in that sense, in the sense that I think they are very used to controlling games. They are very used to having the ball. And that team is designed to have control and possession of the football more than 60, 70% of the time. And therefore, what Pep has built that team for is when we're up against a low block or a mid block or whatever, this is how we play. And we've got the players to try and unblock that. And we know what we need to do, right? I think if we went there and we were brave and we said, actually, we're going to have a go. And actually, we don't think your defense is as good as ours. Because I think you can make a good argument that it's not.
It's not. It's not.
Then it could be a very interesting game where we actually say, like, we're going to get, like, if Martin, I think Martinelli really needs to be fit for this game. And if Kyle Walker is not fit, that will help us. And then we just say, just go at them, run at them, like get Stones out of position, and I think Ake had a pretty decent game when he played against us last time, I think, but just get him out of position, just get them feeling uncomfortable. And I think because we watched that Liverpool game where, Liverpool Man City, where Liverpool should have scored two or three goals, right? If it wasn't for Nunes and, Diaz, I think it was Diaz, not and Nunes to a certain extent, not being able to finish, that could have been 3 or 4-1. They managed to get at that defense. So I don't know. It's very. I think the head tells me draw. The heart does say maybe we can go there, give them a game, and if we take our chances, unlike Liverpool, then we could come out with a big statement.
Yeah, you may well not be wrong. It's interesting because I don't know if you've read a lot of the tactical breakdowns recently that have kind of been just doing the rounds during international breaks. You usually get more pieces breaking down kind of Arsenal. I've been reading a couple. They're really quite interesting. Where one in particular, which I found really interesting, and I remembered it, again, just before this podcast, because I was, as I mentioned, listening to the Stick to Football podcast. On the Stick to Football podcast, Gary Neville was talking about how he's really surprised that teams don't just try and stop Rodri from playing, because he was basically saying that, everything that City do kind of basically goes through Rodri. And they're just so surprised that teams don't do that. And he was basically talking about teams in the past, how he's been so surprised, like, for example, when he was at United towards the sort of back end of Scholes' kind of career, last 3-4 years, he said he could never understand why teams weren't just like stopping Scholes from kind of playing, because everything they did was through him. And I found that really interesting, because when I was reading this write-up that Rohan Jeeva did on Gunnerstown, I think, and he broke down basically how Arsenal had been setting up against Man City in the Community Shield and Liverpool at home in the Premier League. And he was kind of doing just taking those, because he sort of saw some patterns in both those games, and he was comparing it to some of the stuff that we were doing previously. And it was really, really interesting. But with his observations on Man City, he basically said in the Community Shield, the two things that we did, which were like fundamentally different from kind of when we played City in the previous season. One was actually how we press. So we did this hybrid press where essentially it was zonal kind of through the middle of the pitch. But the moment the balls went wide, it was just incredibly aggressive man-to-man kind of pressing, because that was different. The other thing was different was, because we basically just didn't let Rodri turn. Like every time Rodri got the ball, it was like, do not let him turn and face the play. Like, stop him. Like, it was basically what Gary Neville was talking about. We basically did was just like shut him down. I feel like Arteta sort of, I imagine if there's any team that he's obsesses about over Arsenal, it's Man City, right? And I imagine that he's got ideas in his head of exactly what he needs to do to stop Man City. Whether he's able to execute them, whether our teams will be able to execute them, whether Pep's got a counter plan is a different point, because actually last season when we went away at the Etihad, it seemed like City did have a counter plan to what we were trying to do and ended up kind of getting so much kind of so much space through the lines, and KDB and Haaland were just, you know, absolutely destroying us. So maybe there'll be some counter punches, but you know, I feel like Arteta is going into this game, I feel like he's going to go into this game going, I've got a plan. And if we execute this plan, we're going to win. Like, I've got a very clear set of plans, you know? So I'm really interested in it from that perspective.
Yeah. And that's the one thing you can bank on Arteta to have, right? Is he has a plan for everyone. I think you're right. I think Rodri's key. The one thing Liverpool did well, that they did well, but they managed to get Rodri booked quite early on. And Rodri in a yellow card is a very different player, because his whole game is about those sneaky little fouls, those little mini elbows, those little kicks here and there. And he gets away with so much, I think, because he reminds me of, you know, I love Rodri and I hate him at the same time. He reminds me of Gilberto in that sense, where like Gilberto was like the master of just fouling players but never getting a yellow card. Rodri is the same, but the minute he's on a yellow, he changes. And I think he's so crucial to how City play and how much they depend on him. And he's a very, very good player, and he gets goals and gets quite big goals now and then. He turns up and can do that too. So yeah, I think you're right. Just keeping him quiet is going to be so important.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm super excited. So, I tell you what, that's probably a good place to wrap it up. I mean, we've talked a little bit about, you know, the fixture, the run-in. We've talked about the Man City game. And you know what, like maybe we will save kind of talking about the prospect of Bayern Munich for another day, maybe, because the Bayern Munich game is probably going to come up very soon. So, you know, we can probably just do it in the preview then. I mean, it's exciting times, isn't it? It really, really is the business end. So, look, Aaron, and thank you very much, my friend, for joining me on the podcast this evening. It was good talking to you as always. And everyone, I hope you are looking forward to a huge Easter Sunday weekend. You know, it's a massive, massive game. And like, come on, let's, fingers crossed, everything crossed. Let's go for it.
Indeed.
Thank you all. Cheers. Bye-bye. See you, mate. Bye.